Hello and welcome to the Uplifting Content Podcast. I'm your host and the founder of Uplifting Content, Ione Butler. And in each episode, I'll be speaking to a special guest about a topic that matters. Enjoy the show. I'm so excited because the topic is, let's talk about the hidden forces that drive your behavior with Vanessa Van Edwards. Vanessa, thank you so much for joining me today. How's it going?
It's good. Thanks for having me.
Cool. I'm like, this is my real smile because look, I've got the crow's feet and everything.
Crow's feet are good, everyone. Smile wrinkles are good.
So guys, I'm very excited to be speaking to Vanessa because I am fascinated by people. I always have been. And the work she does is all about the science of people and understanding behaviors and all that type of stuff. So it's very cool. Vanessa, could you just tell us a little bit about the science of people and your work and what you do?
Sure. So I like to joke, I'm a recovering awkward person, which means that people skills did not come naturally to me. And so I set out to figure out, was there some kind of science for us recovering awkward people that we could use to understand what makes us tick, the hidden side of people, and how to be more influential with our charisma, our words, our body. And when I started to dive into it, I found a lot of great resources out there, but a lot of them were taught by extroverts. So many people skills books and courses by these very highly charismatic people, which is great. But what I found is if you're very highly charismatic or very extroverted and you're trying to teach an ambivert or an introvert how to learn people skills, it's very hard because if it doesn't come naturally to you and someone says to you, just be yourself, just smile more, just be more authentic. For someone who has no natural inclination for that, that sounds like a death sentence.
Right.
And so I thought, okay, what if there was a way to teach people skills like science or math, right? You go into a science class and you learn formulas, algorithms, blueprints. I was like, is there conversational formulas? Are there social blueprints that we could learn to apply to social skills just like hard skills? And so that's what we do at the Science People. I try to apply a hard skills approach to soft skills.
I like it. Now, you said you were formerly an awkward person. You don't seem awkward at all anymore. I would love to
always hear, in recovery. I'm still in recovery.
Yeah, we're always growing. I'd love to hear about just your journey and how you got into the work that you're doing. And would you say that you're an introvert now still, or does that change? Like, I'm just fascinated by like the story of you within all of this work.
Yeah. So when I was in high school, I had to do this exercise that was, are you an introvert or an extrovert? And I remember sitting around the table, our health teacher ran this little exercise on a rainy day at school, and she had all the introverts sitting on one side of the room and all the extroverts on the other side of the room. Now, if you're not an extrovert, self-identifying is terrifying, right? Like an introvert never wants to be like, me, I'm an introvert, right here. Right? It's a cruel exercise, actually. So I remember very distinctly sitting in that room and like looking over the extroverts, and they were all the cool kids, and I definitely didn't belong over there. And I remember looking at the introverts and being like, well, I talk more than them and they're really great, but I'm not quite as quiet as them. And I remember feeling that I didn't belong on either side of the room. And now I have found research that found that there is actually a middle category, which is called ambivert. And this was a huge sigh of relief for me. This is one of the studies that was pivotal in me getting into this work and realizing there's a better way here. It's not the way that we learned it always. So ambiverts, so let's start with extroverts. They're the easiest. So extroverts get energy. They get social energy from interactions and people. They're having a bad day or they're in a bad mood. They call their friends. They go out and party with their friends. They go out and grab a drink with friends. That gives them social energy. They want to commiserate. They have a good day. They want to celebrate with friends. They want to be with friends. They want to call friends. Introverts get social energy and they recharge from being by themselves. They like to focus. They like to be internally, like to observe, and they can go out and be social, but they have to recharge first. Ambiverts. And my theory is this is actually most people. I think that we're getting into the decade of the ambivert. I'm going to champion this term. Ambiverts are situational extroverts or situational introverts. So in the right situations around the right people, they come alive. They're their best self. They feel like they can share a great story or be vulnerable, and they feel like they can be themselves. In a bad situation around toxic people, they completely shut down. They're their worst selves. They're critical of themselves. They judge themselves. All they want to do is hibernate and be alone. So what's great is all three of these personality traits have strengths, but it's really important to know your facets you can optimize for it. And that's what got me into this work, was realizing that a lot of the traditional advice I had heard, one, you have to be introvert or extrovert. Oops. Lost my earpiece. Got so excited with my hand gestures.
I've heard about those. They're great, apparently.
I know. First, that you have to be in one of these two categories. And second, that you have to feign be an extrovert to be liked. Mm-hmm. And that was what I was taught a lot, is that you had to be the bubbly, outgoing extrovert for people to like you. And now I know that is simply not true. And so why I do this work is to try to show people you have a unique brand of charisma. You just have to find it.
Mm. There are so many different avenues I want to touch on from this. But on this topic, what then is for an introvert, what are some of the things that are good for them to do? Because extroverts, you go out, you can speak to people, you can be friendly, you're confident, you do that. If you're an introvert, how do you go out and be liked when you don't want to walk up to people?
Okay, perfect. So every one of these traits has social strengths. Mm-hmm. And what you want to do is figure out your social strengths. So I've been wanting to create, you know, there's Strengths Finder 2.0 where they have like your career strengths.
Mm, that's a great idea.
Yeah, there's these social strengths that I think people undervalue. So for example, an introvert can have empathy or perceptiveness, observation. They can be great connectors one-to-one. They can have really great, deep, meaningful conversations. Those are all very specific social strengths. Just like extroverts might not be great observers, but they might be great storytellers or great fun finders, right? Like they're really good life of the party, but they're maybe not as good at observing or being perceptive on subtle mood changes in the room.
Right.
So what you want to do is I would sit down, get out a notebook and a pen, and make a column of all of your social strengths and get into the really nitty gritty. Think of all the times in the last 5 years where you felt you added value to a person or an interaction. Mm-hmm. So this could be as small as calming or soothing someone if they've had a bad day. Mm-hmm. It could be as big as leading a project at work and doing so via email, right? Making sure that all the people got coordinated. Sometimes introverts are very good organizers, very mm-hmm. good coordinators. Think of all those times where you've had some kind of positive impact. That's your social strengths column. In the second column, I want you to put your social weaknesses. Mm-hmm. And these are things that I don't think you necessarily have to avoid at all costs, but there are ways, there are opportunities for you to optimize. So this could be telling a joke. Mm-hmm. It could be public speaking. And maybe even public speaking is a really broad category. Get even more specific. Maybe you're great at leading a meeting with your team, but you're not so good at giving a toast at a wedding. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Those are two very different kinds of public speaking. Mm-hmm. And so you might actually find that, wow, you know, I'm really great at leading my meeting, my team of five people, but a wedding toast, nope, that's going to be my partner. My partner is going to do that for me always. Mm-hmm. Knowing those, having a list of them helps you make decisions in the moment when someone says, hey, will you stand up and give a toast? You know that's not for you, right? Or, hey, will you take charge of this meeting? Or, hey, will you introduce me to your friend? You'll know whether you can say yes or no much quicker if you have that list that you've put together.
Right. That's smart. It's reminding me of a book I really liked a while back called Personality Plus. Have you heard of it?
No. What is it about?
Different personality types, and they use different terms from extrovert and introvert. But what reminded me of it is when you were saying about people who introverts have very different qualities, and it is that they're very analytical. They think before they speak, and sometimes extroverts can just sort of steamroll into a conversation and blow everyone out the way and not listen. And so, but there's all these pros and cons and benefits and negatives or whatever of our unique skills. So I love that. Just sort of touch on what makes you unique. You're right. And then just being able to listen is a great quality that an introvert would have to make people warm to them. So yeah, genius. So back to you and your story. So you had this realization that you're an ambivert, which I want to say
ambivert.
Okay, I think I might be that, you know, because I need to be around people, but I also don't like being in crowds.
that you were definitely an ambivert.
Okay, great.
For sure.
That's, you just helped me figure something out. So you had that realization, you kind of learned about these studies. What did you take psychology in school? Like what was you?
So gosh, this is such a funny career path, and I'm happy to go into sort of the windy way. Mm-hmm. So actually I started off doing a lot of youth coaching. So I as a recovering awkward person, I had tons of social anxiety, and I always was like, why did no one ever teach me this in school?
Right.
And, right. Like that was like, I just was flabbergasted that it didn't exist. So what I started doing was youth coaching and helping teenagers with their confidence, with their study skills. Cause that was so, I was young at the time, and I decided after school that I wanted to be an entrepreneur, which my parents were like, what? And so I started off youth coaching. The funny thing about it was that no one at the time especially really knew what youth coaching was. It was the very beginning of coaching. Blogs were still very new. YouTube had just started, just come on the scene. And so it was this career that I was like, I'm going to be a youth coach. And my parents were like, oh, what? And parents were like, what was that? And so I ran into this problem where I knew I had this service that I wanted to offer, but no one knew what it was. I didn't know how to sell it. So I accidentally stumbled upon a very powerful formula, which was one thing that I knew that parents wanted was tutoring.
Yeah.
Everyone wanted tutoring. And I was living in Los Angeles at the time. Tutoring, you could charge a lot per hour for tutoring. So I was like, okay, I can tutor, but what I'll do is I'll offer a deal where I offer 10 tutoring hours and one free coaching hour, like a package. And parents were always like, oh, okay, great. 10 coaching hours and 10 tutoring hours and a free coaching hour. Sure.
Why not?
And what was really great is I actually had 10 sessions to get to know these kids and the family to be able to build the perfect coaching for session at the end of these tutoring hours. So I went through all these tutoring hours. And at the end, I was like, okay, here's my hour where I get to do my coaching session. And I developed like a little individualized curriculum for just them. And that was how my business began to grow. Mm. Parents were like, oh my God, that coaching session was great. And I would do a little bit of body language. I would do verbal communication strategies. I would do confidence. I would do like self-esteem workshops. I would even help them if they want to start a little side business. I would do study skills, any kind of skill. And it was amazing because they came to life and parents began to talk about it. Mm-hmm. And I started to get requests from all over the city. By about 10 or 12 months in, I had 10 tutors working for me using those methods. Wow. Where I taught them how to do the coaching and the tutoring. Mm-hmm. And so I had this massive sort of youth coaching / tutoring business in Los Angeles. And one of the parents said, you know, I love that body language stuff you're teaching to my kid. Is there any way that you could teach that at my company? And that was the tipping point. That was the beginning where I realized, wait a minute, there's more here. There's more here than just working with youth and teens.
Does that coaching business still exist? Because I think it's so prevalent, necessary for kids at that age. Does that still exist, or is there someone else running it?
So now I have a certification program where youth coaches take our certification and they teach it in their business. So yes, in a way, I don't run their business, but they take our kind of coaching and body language and then they teach it to their teenagers. So it's kind of cool. It's morphed into this thing I never would have guessed or existed.
I love it. And so with that stuff that you were teaching, where did you learn this? Did you learn this in school? Were you like super into personal development and just studying a bunch of people? Or how did you get these?
I wish I had taken more of these courses in school. No, I had to learn everything after school. I ended up in school. I did take psychology and sociology, but I was actually a Chinese major. I thought I was going to be in international business. And so it was after school that I really started getting into the personal development work, taking my own certifications. And then what I try to make our unique difference is I'm not an academic and I like that. Mm-hmm. I found that a lot of the academic work that was out there was full of jargon I didn't understand, mm-hmm. right? There's amazing research out there that these 20-page academic papers on a really important concept that is buried in all this jargon. Mm. And so I was like, that will be my differentiator, is that I don't want to be an academic coming at it for other academics. I actually want to take the academics and then translate them into these usable articles. So what we do is I look at all the new databases, all the kind of new research, translate it, put it into our YouTube videos or our blog posts. That's what makes our courses, and make kind of these actionable science case studies for the real world.
Fabulous stuff. Okay, I want to talk about some of these courses in a second too.
Sure.
But just before that, we talked about the topic of this talk is hidden forces that drive your behavior. And we'd love for you to touch on some of those hidden forces that drive our behavior that would be good for us to know about.
Sure. So one of the things that I like to think about when I meet people is I always was fascinated by speed reading in school, right? Mm-hmm. Like you'd get like 200 pages to read in a textbook. And I always was like, how can I do this faster? So I learned speed reading in high school and it completely changed the game for academics. And when I graduated, I wondered, is there a way to speed read people?
But wait, how do you do speed read? Can you just tell me, how do I do that? Like a quick couple of lines about how one can speed read.
Sure. I am no expert in speed reading, but the basic premise is that you learn how to chunk with sentences. So what you're doing is you're reading usually the first word and the last word of a sentence, and then you're looking for verbs in between. Mm-hmm. Once you learn how to chunk sentences, you can do that faster and faster. So you can do a page in a minute as opposed to 5 minutes, because all you're doing is looking for the verbs and the first and last word. It's kind of the
wow. So you are taking it in slightly a lesser way, perhaps, but yes. You're getting through it faster. You're getting the gist of it rather than maybe the time to think about the actual.
Right. And when you're doing lots and lots of reading for school, it's a very, very helpful technique, because actually what most of the testing is on is on the bigger ideas.
Right.
That was the same thing with people. I thought, okay, if I meet someone, I don't need to know every nook and cranny of their persona, right? Like, I don't need to know their deepest, darkest secrets. I don't need to know,
I'm kind of interested by that, but you don't need to.
Secretly, I am. Secretly, I do want to know. But I can't always know, because it's not socially appropriate. That is. Yeah. So I'm like, okay, if I can't, like, read their diary, which is what I really like to do. It's true. How do I speed read them from the clues of their personality? Mm-hmm. And so I think that one of the ways that we do this is with the Big Five. So there's a lot of personality research out there. You mentioned that book that you, Personality Plus, I think you said it was called. The best personality research out there is called the Big Five. And this is what's accepted around academic universities around the world, research organizations. And it's that this basic premise that every human has five basic personality traits. And that you can either be high, medium, or low in each of these traits. Mm-hmm. And when I read this research, it was like something clicked for me. And I was like, okay, this gives me a starting point where if I meet someone and I can just figure out even two or three of their traits, that gives me a really interesting like diode to their who they are. I call it a matrix. So in my book, I talk about this. Everyone I know has a matrix. Mm-hmm. And their matrix is basically where do they fall in these personality traits? So one of them we've already learned, extroversion. So extroversion is one of them. So you can remember the Big Five by ocean: openness, conscientiousness, extroversion, agreeableness, and eroticism. So extroversion is one of them. So one of the very first things I'm trying to find out about someone is, are they high or low on the extroversion scale? High extroverts, and there's a lot of cues for this. I have, five chapters on this in the book. Extroverts tend to use more words. They tend to smile more. They tend to ask more provocative questions. They thrive with social energy. With extroverts, I'm going to ask them much more deep questions more quickly, because they appreciate that. They thrive off of it.
Right.
An introvert, on the other hand, is usually going to observe first. They're usually going to use less words. And they typically don't want to go deep as fast. With introverts, I'm very careful to respect their introversion. I don't want to ask them a big, deep question really fast, because that's going to be getting into their comfort zone mm-hmm. faster than I want to. Mm-hmm. So for them, I'm going to ask much more broad or bigger conversation starters, or answer myself first. Give them time to think about it first. Mm-hmm. So I think that one of the best ways that you can discover people is to try to figure out each of their personality traits. And I would actually start with extroversion. That's a really, really good one to start with.
I love it. And so talking of your book, Captivate, everyone, just so you know, Vanessa's kindly offered to give away a copy of the book. So we'll have the link to that. But it's also available. And you narrate the audiobook. So I think that's going to be next on my
Oh, gosh. You'll hear. I had so much fun narrating the audiobook. And I do like my friends' voices. Like I try to mimic my dad. I try to mimic my friends. And I had so much fun with it.
That's a key. That's one of the key things to narrating audiobooks. You do different character voices for things. So I love that you did that. I'm currently listening to Michelle Obama's one right now. And I
really want to listen.
Hooked. Oh my God. It's 19 hours and I've been listening to it for like 4 days and I'm nearly done and I am hooked.
She read it?
She does. And it's just really nice to listen to the author, because you know what you're talking about, because it's your book. And so I look forward to listening to yours too. So guys, recommend you check out Captivate. So that'd be great, because then there's obviously more details about the different, the five, the Big Five. Yeah. Saying So you'd also touched on, you've got some courses, and one of them that caught my eye was the one about catching out liars.
Yes.
That sounds awesome. So tell me about this course.
Oh man. Okay. So this came from a very personal place. I was very naive growing up, maybe still am a little bit. I tend to see the bright side of people, and that got me into some trouble. And so one of the very first people skills I wanted to adopt, so I think of people skills like hard skills, right? Yeah. So like storytelling is a skill. Yeah. Lie detection is a skill. Reading faces is a skill. Like those are all distinct strengths or skills. And so lie detection was one of the very first ones I was like, that I want to master that skill. And so the very first question I had was, first of all, is there really a science to lie detection? Like, can you really do it? Is there any truth to it? And there's very interesting research on lie detection. Yes, there is in fact a science. Now you can't get to 100% accuracy. So no human can be 100% accurate at spotting lies. However, we can drastically improve our results. So the average human being can spot a lie with about 54% accuracy.
Yeah, I think actual lie detectors are only like 60% accurate, right?
Right, yeah.
So we're not that far off.
we're not that good. And 54% is like a coin toss. You're better off being like, oh, my head's lie. Like, we're not very good at it.
Yeah.
Whereas if you learn, the research found, if you learn facial expressions, so decoding the face, body language, decoding body cues, and statement analysis, so how we use our words when we lie, you can improve your spotting abilities up to 80%, which is a massive improvement. And so once I figured out that scientific technique, it took a lot. There was no one research. It was in a couple of books, a couple of research studies. I was like, you know what? I want to build a course that takes all the best scientific research and puts it into one framework. So the course we have is 7 steps to hopefully getting to that 80% improvement. And I can never get to 100%, but at least to use this framework. And this can be, we have all different kinds of students, dating, social situations, people who do a lot of like negotiations in business or client work in business. I think this is a nice tool to have in your belt. I like to think of it as insurance, social insurance.
That's fantastic. It sounds really fun. One of the things that gets to me though is, you know how sometimes, and you've got like, you debunk a few of these myths about lying, because you know what, people watch shows or they do a couple of, there's this thing about, you know, lying, and I'm like, oh, if you've got your arms folded, it means you're not interested. Or if you look a certain way, it means that you're lying. And then they're,
or
like,
if you look up to the left,
right. So these aren't, because when people say that to me, oh, you're crossing your arms, you're fed up or you're bored or you've got a problem. I'm like, no, I'm cold. There's like a practical reason.
Exactly. Actually, that was another reason why I really wanted to get this science out there, is because some of the myths are quite evasive and disturbing, right? Like sometimes you are cold. Sometimes you are comfortable. You just want to cross your arms. If people always think you're lying when you do that, that doesn't set you up for very successful relationships.
Right.
So I also try to debunk as many of those as possible. Another big one that we hear all the time is that liars look up to the left when they're lying, or look up to the right, whatever it is. And that research was not backed up. So they could not repeat it. So that's another one that we kind of bust, that it's not so simple, unfortunately. If there was one Pinocchio's nose, we would all know it.
Yeah.
You know, if there was one clue, we would all know it. There's not one, unfortunately.
Is that what is something that you can tell us from the course that is a good thing to look out for with a liar?
So statistically speaking, there's no one cue that means when someone's lying, but statistically speaking, researchers did find that liars will typically get a little bit of a swelling in their nose. You can't see it, but they get like their tissues swell, which often makes their nose itch. So they find that liars will often rub their nose, scratch their nose, sniff when they're lying, because there's a subtle change in the tissues in their nose. So if all of a sudden you see someone who's like touching their nose, rubbing at their nose, it could be, statistically speaking, that maybe they told a little fib.
Or they have a drug problem, or they got a cold coming on.
Or they have allergies.
Allergies, yeah. See, and I think it's good to have that caveat, I think is the right word, to be like, but it could be this, and rather than be like absolute. And then I'm guessing from the course, it's putting all of these things together to build the picture, not just like, ah, I got you because you scratched your nose.
And never be that gotcha person. Like, no one likes that. Like, ha, I saw you scratch your nose. I mean, that's like the worst way to interact. Yeah, so remember, if it's a sudden nose scratch, we're all of a sudden on a particular question that comes with a cluster of other specific nonverbal behavior, maybe something to watch out for.
Gotcha. That's very cool. Okay, cool. You also have another course, People School. People School is reopening. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So I've been waiting my whole career to build this course. And it was basically the course that I wish I had had growing up. It was like, we were taught science, we were taught math, we were taught history. And I was like, where is the people skills class? Mm-hmm. Where are the conversational skills classes? And so this is a 12-week course. It's all online. That's all the 12 people skills I think everyone should know. So we start off with charisma. We go into conversational blueprints. We talk about groups. We talk about teams. We talk about leadership. We talk about influence. So it's the 12 people skills. And we're opening up our next class very soon.
Yes. And so that's just so you have like a launch date and then everyone's in that in the 12 weeks together?
Exactly. And we launch every few weeks. So yeah, definitely check it out. And also I have a little, if you're like not sure, you're like, what does that really mean? I have like a little free audio guide in a class that you can start off with. It's just free. You can listen to about kind of the getting started in your people skills.
Great. And that would be, is that linked to, so I can put it in the show notes and stuff on your website where it talks about the people skills thing? It's on there.
With scienceofpeople.com/pschool, I can send you in the chat.
Perfect. Yeah, we'll include that. One of the things that there's a couple of things that I was fascinated by. One of them is you talk about hand gestures and that we, yeah, that they are important.
I like your nails, by the way.
Basically, some of the gels have come off and like there's these that have remained.
I have nothing.
But, cool. So hand gestures, tell me about that because I worry that I do too much with my hands and sometimes it can be a bit, is there too much hand gestures and why are they good?
Yes. So there is a spectrum. So whenever you talk about body language, it's really important. If you read anything or you hear from a body language expert, there's always a spectrum. Nothing is ever always good or always bad. Like for example, hand gestures are great. They show a lot of trust. They're very charismatic. They help us with comprehension. Mm-hmm. But if I'm like constantly doing this, they're not good.
It's everywhere.
So, right, it's too high. So the best kind of hand gestures are purposeful. Yes. So what that means is you really want your verbal message and your nonverbal message to be congruent. Mm-hmm. So the most charismatic speakers, what they basically are doing is they're outlining their concepts along with their hands. Mm-hmm. So for example, if I say, I have a really big idea, it's huge. You're like, no, it's so small. What are you talking about?
For those that are listening to the podcast, she's just got her, like doing like a little pinchy thing with her fingers without making it like small.
Tiny coin. Like, it's too small, yeah. Right?
Or if you were to say like, I've got one idea and then you put like three fingers up.
You're like, let me tell you three things I want to cover. And I hold up five fingers. Your brain is like, what?
It's so silly. Yeah.
Yeah. So hand gestures, as long as they're congruent, that's what you want. I'm purposeful. Yeah. Also, if for people who are listening, if I were to sit on my hands for this whole interview, I would actually come across as less vocally charismatic. Hmm. So our hands also add a little bit of dynamism. They add dynamicness.
Dynamicism. I mean, let's just.
They make us more dynamic.
Yeah, sure. Dynamicism sounds great.
I don't know. Yeah.
I don't think it's right, but I like this. I like the sound.
Yeah. So like when it adds depth, right? So like if I'm like talking and I'm gesturing, like if I'm making small and I'm making really big, it actually helps me have a more magnetic resonance in my voice. So they also help with a lot of other things that we don't quite know about yet, but your vocal power, your presence, and definitely your comprehension.
I like that. And in your TED Talk, you talk about studying a bunch of TED Talks and finding that those are the most engaging ones had like a lot of hand gestures. So
it's funny, like I've always loved TED Talks and then I ended up doing an experiment on TED Talks and that got me a TED Talk. Funny how the world works. And so my TED Talk is about, exceptional TED Talks and charisma, which put a lot of pressure on me to have a very good TED Talk.
Right. That would really suck if it bombed.
Totally set myself up for failure there. But thank goodness it's like, you know, getting lots and lots of views. And I studied the most successful TED Talks and found that TED speakers who use more hand gestures tend to have higher view counts. Mm-hmm. And that's all connected to people who really know their message, have really purposeful hand gestures. People who use good hand gestures have more vocal charisma and have more stage presence. And so hand gestures is a very underutilized soft skill that I teach a lot in my courses.
Brilliant. And I do like what you're saying about being specific with it, because sometimes I can not be conscious of it. And it's just sort of like mad hands. So yeah.
And also you'll find when people are off track, they'll be like, and then they move their hands as if they're like, their hands are trying to catch up to their brain.
Yeah.
So it's like the more purposeful you can be, the more like specific you can be with your hand gestures, the more controlled you look as well.
I love it. One of the last things that I wanted to touch on is I like being around people and I can talk to anyone very easily, but I really don't like networking events. I struggle to just, I think it's because the whole idea of like, especially if I go on my own and I don't know anybody, that idea of having to be like, oh, hi, talk to me, be my friend, let me talk to you. Like, I just feel so awkward. What would you advise?
Oh my gosh. So this is such a common question. It's actually one of my favorite questions.
Oh, great.
So I feel like there is a way to hack a networking event. And I actually have a big networking event guide on my blog, which you're welcome to read. My favorite easy tip that you can use right now is context cues. So it's really, really hard to walk up to someone cold and be like, hi, I'm Vanessa. Nice to meet you. Extroverts can do it, and you can do that. But what I much rather do for ambiverts, for fellow ambiverts or introverts, is use context cues to be able to introduce yourself or make conversation. Mm-hmm. And the best context cues are the ones that are right at your fingertips. Specifically, my favorite place to stand in networking events. When you go into a networking event, the biggest rookie mistake is to stand right by the door. Mm-hmm. People stand right by the door because they think, oh, you know, I want to get people right when they walk in. I don't know where I'm going to stand. I'm going to, you know, kind of hover by the door and get people right when they're here. That's the worst place to stand, because when people first get there, all they want to do is get their drink. Mm-hmm. It makes people feel confident, makes people feel okay, even if it's just water or coffee or tea. Mm-hmm. So the best place to stand is right where people exit the bar. Okay. So when you see people leaving the bar and you stand right as they get this, when you imagine this, you walk up to the bar, you get your water, or your club soda, or your wine, whatever, and you turn to face the big room and you're like, who do I talk to? If you are standing right there, first of all, it's really easy to make eye contact with people because they're like, and they turn to the room and they're like looking for someone to talk to. Mm-hmm. And then your context cue is right there. Hey, how's that drink? How's the red wine tonight? What are you drinking?
Yeah.
It's a super easy spot to have a really easy opener, and you're actually a social savior. People are so relieved that you're standing there to talk to them. They're like, oh, great. I didn't know anyone. I didn't know who I would talk to.
Nice. You're right. And I'm thinking one of the last Christmas parties that I went to last year, I ended up chatting to the person that was sat at the bar because I was like, oh, I don't want to have to go in there and just be, you know, put out there to the sharks, even though everyone was totally fine. So then with the person standing by the bar, are you kind of facing towards the bar? Or are you facing out towards the room? Or are you sat at the bar? How's about sitting at the bar?
Sitting at the bar is fantastic. Or facing where someone will turn when they exit. Because what you're trying to get is that moment when someone has their drink and they turn to face the room and they're making the decision, what do I do next?
Right.
You want to be next.
Right.
You just want to make sure that it's really easy for them to see you right when they leave.
So rather than you having to go after people to be my friend. And so what do you advise when you're standing there feeling like a lemon waiting for someone to turn around at the bar? Any tips on that?
So that's where it's really nice. You want to also have your own drink, your own food, right? Because you can be drinking, you could be looking around. And ideally what usually happens in this scenario is there are people always filtering through the bar. So you're not going to be standing there for that long, because what's going to happen is you're going to get in line for your drink. And guess what? You're going to talk to the person in front of or behind you.
Yes, yes.
Right? Because you're in line already. So you might as well say, hey, so what are you going to get? Does the wine look good? Does the cocktail look good? So you're already in a conversation. You get to the front, right? You exit, and you're either already talking to the person who's just in line or the person in front of you. And then as that person peels off, you then have the next person who's coming, or you invite them to join your conversation. So almost always, you're actually not standing there very often because you went through the line yourself, and hopefully you were able to chat with a couple people on your way there.
I like that. And finally, how can you, sometimes it's hard to get out of conversations if they're just very consuming, or someone's very chatty to the point where like there's no stop for you to even say anything back. I get a bit overwhelmed by this sometimes. What's nice ways of getting out of them? Because I say I'm going to go to the toilet, but there's only so much to go to the toilet, you know?
Totally. I mean, you can always go to the toilet or get a drink refill. My favorite is actually, I call these verbal exit cues. So I have like a list of 5 verbal exit cues that I recommend. My favorite one is a future mention. So when you mention something in the future, it's a subtle subconscious cue to someone that you're thinking ahead beyond the present case. Mm-hmm. You can say, so what are you up to this weekend? And they say, oh, you know, I'm going to go and visit a couple friends for a birthday party. Oh, well, that sounds wonderful. I hope you have a great weekend. It was great talking to you.
Yeah. So
a future mention is a real, and then you can wish them well on that future mention. And it's a very nice.
I do. That's funny. That's typically how I always end my, like, if I'm hanging out with friends, I'm like, what you got going on the rest of the day? Okay, cool. This is nice. See you later. That's so true.
That's exactly. And people know it's like, it's almost like a cool down for them. Yeah, and so it's a really easy way to get out of it. But I have five others. I can't remember them off the top of my head now, but there's a bunch of others if those don't work for you.
I like it. Vanessa, this was so much fun. Thank you very, very much. we're going to put the links to the People School in there. Did you send me that as a message?
I will.
I'll put a link to that. And then you can get the free audio thing to listen to. And she's also giving away a copy of Captivate, which is a book about, tell me a bit more about the book actually.
Yeah. So Captivate is the kind of handbook that I always wish I had. It's not only how to speed read people, but I've broken down interactions into three different phases. The first 5 minutes, the first 5 hours, and the first 5 days. Mm. So I find that most interactions either have a first impression, a couple first dates or meetings, and then like a deep interaction. So I broke the book into those three phases of the whatever your target area is in relationships, whether you want to find a long-term relationship or you just want to find more friends or you want more clients, hopefully you can kind of have a section that appeals to you most.
This is all great stuff because I know there's lots of people in the uplifting content community, one specifically that's like moved recently, one that's in an area that wants to kind of make more friends and have more deep, meaningful relationships.
Yes.
So these things come up a lot. And so I think all of the skills that you teach are fantastic for that. So
I would be honored to help. Those are exactly the kind of situations where I feel like we have this chance to do something important, do something special, make a bigger impact. And so I would be honored to help. And I'm just grateful for you giving me this space on the podcast to chat. Oh,
my pleasure. And thank you. I want to do all of it now.
You can, you will.
I will. Bring on the next networking event. I'm going to be doing that whole bar thing. So cool. Thanks again, Vanessa. Take care.
Thanks so much.
Bye, everyone. I'll see you next week, or you'll hear me next week. Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Uplifting Content Podcast. If you enjoy this podcast and find it uplifting and inspiring, please leave us a review on iTunes. If you take a picture of your review and email it to us at info@upliftingcontent.com, we will send you a little gift to say thank you. Also, to make sure you never miss a beat, subscribe to my email update. I promise I won't spam you, and I send less than one email a month on average. You can find the sign-up link in the show notes. See you next Tuesday for another episode. Bye.